1. Helga Crane sat alone in her room, which at that hour, 8 in the evening, was in soft gloom. Only a single reading lamp, dimmed by a great black and red shade, made a pool of light on the blue Chinese carpet, on the bright covers of the books which she had taken down from their long shelves, on the white pages of the opened one selected, on the shining brass bowl crowded with many-colored nasturtiums beside her on the low table, and on the oriental silk which covered the stool at her slim feet. It was a comfortable room, furnished with rare and intensely personal taste, flooded with southern sun in the day, but shadowy just then with the drawn curtains and single-shaded light. Large, too. So large that the spot where Helga sat was a small oasis in a desert of darkness, and eerily quiet. But that was what she liked after her taxing day's work, after the hard classes, in which she gave willingly and unsparingly of herself with no apparent return. She loved this tranquility, this quiet, following the fret and strain of the long hours spent among fellow members of a carelessly unkind and gossiping faculty, following the strenuous rigidity of conduct required in this huge educational community, of which she was an insignificant part. This was her rest, this intentional isolation for a short while in the evening, this little time in her own attractive room with her own books, to the rapping of other teachers, bearing fresh scandals, or seeking information, or other more concrete favors, or merely talk. At that hour, Helga Crane never opened her door. An observer, well fitted to that framing of light and shade, a slight girl of 22 years, with narrow sloping shoulders and delicate but well-turned arms and legs, she had, nonetheless, an air of radiant, careless health. In vivid green and gold negligee and glistening brocaded mules, deep sunk in the big, high-backed chair, against whose dark tapestry her sharply cut face, with skin like yellow satin, was distinctly outlined, she was, to use a hackneyed word, attractive. Black, very broad brows over soft, vet, penetrating dark eyes, and a pretty mouth, whose sensitive and sensuous lips had a slight questioning petulance and a tiny, dissatisfied droop, were the features on which the observer's attention would fasten. Though her nose was good, her ears delicately chiseled, and her curly, blue-black hair plentiful and always straying in a little wayward delightful way. But then it was tumbled, following unrestrained about her face and onto her shoulders. Helga Crane tried not to think of her work and the school as she sat there. Ever since her arrival in Naxos, she had striven to keep these ends of the days from the intrusion of irritating thoughts and worries. Usually she was successful, but not this evening. Of the books which she had taken from their places, she had decided on Marmaduke Pictol's Said the Fisherman. She wanted forgetfulness, complete mental relaxation, rest from thought of any kind. For the day had been more than usually crowded with distasteful encounters and stupid perversities. The sultry hot southern spring had left her strangely tired and a little unnerved. And annoying beyond all other happenings had been that affair of the noon period, now again thrusting itself on her already irritated mind. She had counted on a few spare minutes in which to indulge in the sweet pleasure of a bath and a fresh, cool change of clothing. And instead, her luncheon time had been shortened, as had that of everyone else, and immediately after the hurried gulping down of a heavy, hot meal, the hundreds of students and teachers had been herded into the sun-baked chapel to listen to the banal, the patronizing, and even the insulting remarks of one of the renowned white preachers of the state. Helga shuddered a little as she recalled some of the statements made by that holy white man of God to the black folk sitting so respectfully before him. This was, he had told them with obvious sectional pride, the finest school for Negroes anywhere in the country, north or south. In fact, it was better even than a great many schools for white children. And he had dared any northerner to come south after looking upon this great institution to say that the southerner mistreated the Negro. And he had said that if all Negroes would only take a leaf out of the book of Naxos and conduct themselves in the manner of the Naxos products, there would be no race problem, because Naxos Negroes knew what was expected of them. They had good sense and they had good taste. They knew enough to stay in their places. And that, said the preacher, showed good taste.